I cannot remember that he ever told me anything. And he got more and more like that. His face, as I remember it, I've not seen it for many a day, became like windows in a stone wall, windows with shutters inside. I think that I now understand what he's up to. He is plotting to become a power. He has a mind of metal and wheels, and he does not care for growing things, except as far as they serve him for the moment. And now it is clear that he is a black traitor. He is taken up with foul folk, with the orcs. Vroom, vroom. Worse than that, he has been doing something to them, something dangerous, for these Isengarders are more like wicked men. It is a mark of evil things that came in the great darkness that they cannot abide the sun. But Saruman's orcs can endure it, even if they hate it. I wonder what he has done. Are they men he has ruined, or has he blended the races of orcs and men? That would be a black evil.
Treebeard rumbled for a moment, as if he were pronouncing some deep subterranean Entish malediction.
Some time ago I began to wonder how orcs dared to pass through my woods so freely, he went on. Only lately did I guess that Saruman was to blame, and that long ago he had been spying out all the ways and discovering my secrets. He and his foul folk are making havoc now. Down on the borders they are felling trees, good trees. Some of the trees they just cut down and leave to rot. Orc mischief, that. But most are hewn up and carried off to feed the fires of Orthonk. There is always a smoke rising from Isengard these days. Curse him, root and branch. Many of those trees were my friends, creatures I had known from nut and acorn. Many had voices of their own that are lost forever now. And there are wastes of stump and bramble where once there were singing groves. I have been idle. I have let things slip. It must stop.
Treebeard raised himself from his bed with a jerk, stood up, and thumped his hand on the table. The vessels of light trembled and sent up two jets of flame. There was a flicker like green fire in his eyes, and his beard stood out stiff as a great besom.
I will stop it, he boomed, and you shall come with me. You may be able to help me. You will be helping your own friends that way, too. For if Saruman is not checked, Rohan and Gondor will have an enemy behind as well as in front. Our roads go together to Isengard.
We will come with you, said Merry. We will do what we can.
Yes, said Pippin. I should like to see the White Hand overthrown. I should like to be there, even if I could not be of much use. I shall never forget Ugluk and the crossing of Rohan.
Good, good, said Treebeard. But I spoke hastily. We must not be hasty. I have become too hot. I must cool myself and think, for it is easier to shout stop than to do it.
He strode to the archway and stood for some time under the falling rain of the spring. Then he laughed and shook himself, and wherever the drops of water fell glittering from him to the ground, they glinted like red and green sparks. He came back and laid himself on the bed again and was silent. After some time the hobbits heard him murmuring again. He seemed to be counting on his fingers.
Fangorn, Finglas, Fladriff, I,
he sighed. The trouble is that there are so few of us left, he said, turning towards the hobbits. Only three remain of the first Ents that walked in the woods before the darkness. Only myself, Fangorn, and Finglas, and Fladriff, to give them their elvish names. You may call them Leaflock and Skinbark, if you like that better. And of us three, Leaflock and Skinbark are not much use for this business. Leaflock has grown sleepy. Almost tree-ish, you might say. He has taken to standing by himself half asleep all through the summer with the deep grass of the meadows round his knees. Covered with leafy hair he is. He used to rouse up in winter,
But of late he's been too drowsy to walk far even then. Skinbark lived on the mountain slopes west of Isengard. That is where the worst trouble has been. He was wounded by the orcs, and many of his folk and his tree herds have been murdered and destroyed. He's gone up into the high places, among the birches that he loves best, and he will not come down. Still, I dare say, I could get together a fair company of our younger folk, if I can make them understand the need, if I could rouse them. We are not a hasty folk. What a pity there are so few of us.
Why are there so few when you've lived in this country so long? Asked Pippin. Have a great many died?
Oh, no, said Treebeard. None have died from inside, as you might say. Some have fallen in the evil chances of the long years, of course, and more have grown tree-ish. But there were never many of us, and we have not increased. There have been no entings, no children, you would say, not for a terrible long count of years. You see, we lost the entwives.
How very sad, said Pippin. How was it that they all died?
They did not die, said Treebeard. I never said died. We lost them, I said. We lost them and we cannot find them, he sighed. I thought most folk knew that. There were songs about the hunt of the Ents for the Entwives, sung among elves and men from Mirkwood to Gondor. They cannot be quite forgotten.
Well, I'm afraid the songs have not come west over the mountains to the Shire, said Merry. Won't you tell us some more, or sing us one of your songs?
Yes, I will indeed, said Treebeard, seeming pleased with the request. But I cannot tell it properly, only in short, and then we must end our talk. Tomorrow we have councils to call, and work to do, and maybe a journey to begin. It is rather a strange and sad story, he went on after a pause. When the world was young, and the woods were wide and wild, the Ents and the Entwives, and there were Ent maidens then. Ah, the loveliness of Fimbrethil, of Wandlim the light-footed in the days of our youth. They walked together and they housed together. But our hearts did not go on growing in the same way. The Ents gave their love to things that they met in the world, and the Entwives gave their thought to other things, for the Ents loved the great trees and the wild woods, and the slopes of the high hills, and they drank of the mountain streams, and ate only such fruit as the trees let fall in their path, and they learned of the elves, and spoke with the trees. But the Entwives gave their minds to the lesser trees, and to the meads in the sunshine beyond the feet of the forests, and they saw the sloe in the thicket, and the wild apple and the cherry blossoming in spring, and the green herbs in the waterlands in summer, and the seeding grasses in the autumn fields. They did not desire to speak with these things, but they wished them to hear and obey what was said to them. The Entwives ordered them to grow according to their wishes, and bear leaf and fruit to their liking, for the Entwives desired order, and plenty, and peace, by which they meant that things should remain where they had set them. So the Entwives made gardens to live in. But we Ents went on wandering, and we only came to the gardens now and again. Then when the darkness came in the north, the Entwives crossed the great river and made new gardens, and tilled new fields, and we saw them more seldom. After the darkness was overthrown, the land of the Entwives blossomed richly, and their fields were full of corn. Many men learned the crafts of the Entwives and honored them greatly. But we were only a legend to them, a secret in the heart of the forest. Yet here we still are, while all the gardens of the Entwives are wasted. Men call them the Brownlands now. I remember it was long ago, in the time of the war between Sauron and the Men of the Sea, desire came over me to see Fimbrethil again. Very fair she was still in my eyes, when I had last seen her, though little like the Entmaiden of old. For the Entwives were bent and browned by their labor, their hair parched by the sun to the hue of ripe corn, and their cheeks like red apples. Yet their eyes were still the eyes of our own people. We crossed over Anduin and came to their land, but we found a desert. It was all burned and uprooted, for war had passed over it. But the Entwives were not there. Long we called, and long we searched, and we asked all folk that we met which way the Entwives had gone. Some said they had never seen them, and some said that they had seen them walking away west, and some said east, and others south. But nowhere that we went could we find them. Our sorrow was very great. Yet the wildwood called, and we returned to it. For many years we used to go out every now and again and look for the Entwives, looking far and wide and calling them by their beautiful names. But as time passed, we went more seldom and wandered less far. And now the Entwives are only a memory for us, and our beards are long and grey. The elves made many songs concerning the search of the Ents, and some of the songs passed into the tongues of men. But we made no songs about it, being content to chant their beautiful names when we thought of the Entwives. We believe that we may meet again in a time to come, and perhaps we shall find somewhere a land where we can live together and both be content. But it is foreboded that that will only be when we have both lost all that we now have. And it may well be that that time is drawing near at last. For if Sauron of old destroyed the gardens, the enemy today seems likely to wither all the woods. There was an elvish song that spoke of this, or at least so I understand it. It used to be sung up and down the great river. It was never an Entish song, mark you. It would have been a very long song in Entish, but we know it by heart and hum it now and again. This is how it runs in your tongue. The Ent sings, when spring unfolds the beech and leaf, and sap is in the bough, when light is on the wildwood stream, and wind is on the brow, when stride is long, and breath is deep, and keen the mountain air, come back to me, come back to me, and say my land is fair. And the Entwife replies, when spring is come to garth and field, and corn is in the blade, when blossom like a shining snow is on the orchard laid, when shower and sun upon the earth with fragrance fill the air, I linger here and will not come, because my land is fair. So the Ent sings, when summer lies upon the world, and in a noon of gold, beneath the roof of sleeping leaves, the dreams of trees unfold, when woodland halls are green and cool, and wind is in the west, come back to me, come back to me, and say my land is best. And the Entwife replies, when summer warms the hanging fruit and burns the berry brown, when straw is gold and ear is white and harvest comes to town, when honey spills and apple swells, the wind be in the west, I linger here beneath the sun, because my land is best. When wind comes, the winter wild, that hill and wood shall slay,
When trees shall fall and starless night devour the sunless day, when wind is in the deadly east, then in the bitter rain, I look for thee and call to thee. I'll come to thee again. When winter comes and singing ends, when darkness falls at last, when broken is the barren bough and light and labor past, I'll look for thee and wait for thee until we meet again. Together we will take the road beneath the bitter rain. Together we will take the road that leads into the west, and far away we'll find a land where both our hearts may rest.
Treebeard ended his song.
That is how it goes, he said. It is elvish, of course, light-hearted, quick-worded, and soon over. I dare say it is fair enough, but the Ents could say more on their side if they had time. But now I am going to stand up and take a little sleep. Where will you stand?
We usually lie down to sleep, said Merry. We shall be all right where we are.
Lie down to sleep, said Treebeard. Why, of course you do. I was forgetting. Singing that song put me in mind of old times. Almost thought that I was talking to young Entings, I did. Well, you can lie on the bed. I'm going to stand in the rain. Good night.
Merry and Pippin climbed onto the bed and curled up in the soft grass and fern. It was fresh and sweet-scented and warm. The lights died down and the glow of the trees faded, but outside, under the arch, they could see old Treebeard standing, motionless, with his arms raised above his head. The bright stars peered out of the sky and lit the falling water as it spilled onto his fingers and head and dripped, dripped, in hundreds of silver drops onto his feet. Listening to the tinkling of the drops, the hobbits fell asleep. They woke to find a cool sun shining into the great court and onto the floor of the bay. Shreds of high cloud were overhead, running on a stiff easterly wind. Treebeard was not to be seen, but while Merry and Pippin were bathing in the basin by the arch, they heard him humming and singing as he came up the path between the trees.
Ho, ho! Good morning, Merry and Pippin, he boomed when he saw them. You sleep long. I've been many a hundred strides already today. Now we will have a drink and go to Entmoot.
He poured them out two full bowls from a stone jar, but from a different jar. The taste was not the same as it had been the night before. It was earthier and richer, more sustaining and food-like, so to speak. While the hobbits drank, sitting on the edge of the bed and nibbling small pieces of elf cake, more because they felt that eating was a necessary part of breakfast than because they felt hungry, Treebeard stood, humming in Entish or Elvish or some strange tongue, and looking up at the sky.
"Where is Entmoot?" Pippin ventured to ask.
"Who? Eh? Entmoot?" said Treebeard, turning round. "It is not a place. It is a gathering of Ents, which does not happen often nowadays. But I have managed to make a fair number promise to come. We shall meet in the place where we have always met. Dern Dingle, men call it. It is a way south from here. We must be there before noon."
Before long they set off. Treebeard carried the hobbit in his arms as on the previous day. At the entrance to the court he turned to the right, stepped over the stream, and strode away southwards along the feet of great tumbled slopes where trees were scanty. Above these the hobbits saw thickets of birch and rowan, and beyond them dark climbing pine woods. Soon Treebeard turned a little away from the hills and plunged into deep groves, where the trees were larger, taller, and thicker than any that the hobbits had ever seen before. For a while they felt faintly the sense of stifling which they had noticed when they first ventured into Fangorn, but it soon passed. Treebeard did not talk to them. He hummed to himself deeply and thoughtfully, but Merry and Pippin caught no proper words. It sounded like boom, boom, rum-boom, boo-da, boom-boom, da-da-boom-boom, da-da-boom, and so on with a constant change of note and rhythm. Now and again they thought they heard an answer, a hum or a quiver of sound that seemed to come out of the earth, or from boughs above their heads, or perhaps from the boles of the trees. But Treebeard did not stop or turn his head to either side. They had been going for a long while. Pippin had tried to keep count of the Ent strides, but had failed, getting lost at about 3,000 when Treebeard began to slacken his pace. Suddenly he stopped, put the hobbits down, and raised his curled hands to his mouth so that they made a hollow tube. Then he blew or called through them. A great hum, hum, rang out like a deep-throated horn in the woods, and seemed to echo from the trees. Far off there came from several directions a similar hum, hum, hum. That was not an echo, but an answer. Treebeard now perched Merry and Pippin on his shoulders, and strode on again, every now and then sending out another horn call, and each time the answers came louder and nearer. In this way they came at last to what looked like an impenetrable wall of dark evergreen trees, trees of a kind that the hobbits had never seen before. They branched out right from the roots, and were densely clad in dark, glossy leaves like thornless holly, and they bore many stiff, upright flower spikes with large, shining, olive-coloured buds. Turning to the left and skirting this huge hedge, Treebeard came in a few strides to a narrow entrance. Through it a worn path passed, and dived suddenly down a long, steep slope. The hobbits saw that they were descending into a great dingle, almost as round as a bowl, very wide and deep, crowned at the rim with a high, dark, evergreen hedge. It was smooth and grass-clad inside, and there were no trees except three very tall and beautiful silver birches that stood at the bottom of the bowl. Two other paths led down into the dingle, from the west and from the east.